Welcome to the Florida Grown Femme Podcast,
where best friends Janet and Sage cover everything from sex to Starbucks.
Grab a coffee and join.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Florida Grown Femmes. I'm Janet.
I'm Sage.
And this is our second episode.
Yoo-hoo!
Yes, thank you so much, everybody, for all the love and support we've already had on our first episode. It was amazing hearing your feedback, and we appreciate it so, so much. We are so excited to bring you this week's topic. We think you guys are going to really like it. Sage, do you want to intro our question?
Yeah. So today's question is... Can a Christian be a feminist?
Ooh, interesting topic. Interesting topic. So I think what I love about this topic, Sage, is because this highlights a big belief in who we are. But I think what's so interesting about this question is, depending on where you fall on a particular spectrum, you may feel like this question isn't even relevant. You may feel like this question is a hot topic, and some of you may be, you don't even know. You don't even know what to think about this topic. So we're really excited to kind of deep dive into this. We know that there are strong belief systems on any spectrum on how you answer this, whether this is a strong yes for you, a strong no, or a strong I don't know. We know that there are strong beliefs, opinions about this. And so with that in mind, Sage and I, we know that there are opinions. We've heard them all. We're not immune. Like, we're not so liberal. We're not so feminist that aren't aware of some of these conservative talking points, because for the most part, they've been said to us. So
definitely. Well, before we get too far into our answer for the question, I really think it's important that we define our terms.
Yes.
We define what it means to be a Christian. We define what it means to be a feminist. I say that because there is a wide spectrum of individuals who are walking around with the label Christian. Mm-hmm. And there is a wide spectrum of people who are walking around with the label feminist. And oftentimes when we have labels, we have a certain view of what those people believe. Yeah. And I feel that there's actually quite a lot of diversity within each one of those labels. So for me personally, I would define a Christian as someone who is a follower of Christ.
Yes.
So looking to live their life as Christ did his in the best way they can, given the cultural differences.
Right.
And I would define a feminist as someone who is interested in the equality of women. And also for me, it means advocating for women.
One of the reasons that this is such a hot topic is that people are defining things in their own terms and deciding the argument before they even know what the terms are. And so for me, I agree a lot with what Sage has just said. I believe a Christian is someone that is trying to follow Christ to the best of their abilities and has made that conscious decision. I also believe a feminist is someone that believes women are equal, that, and for me specifically financially as well in the workplace, I think that's where it comes in really strongly for me, that women are equal. They deserve equal pay. They deserve equal leadership opportunities and titles. And so that is our terms. This is Sage and Janet. This is what we believe Christians, this is what we believe feminists are. And so as we move forward, these are our definitions. So if you're going to go against what we're saying, we can't argue with you because these are our terms. This is how we are making our point. So do you want to kind of jump into that a little bit more then, Sage? Or do you think we need to dive more into how we're defining ourselves or defining our terms?
Well, I do just want to make one statement that I think Christians might be more shocked to hear me accept the label of feminism, because of maybe their perceived beliefs of what a feminist looks like. And I would say to them, I'm just as certain in my label of being a feminist as I am in my label of being a Christian. So I recognize the diversity between all the different types of Christians and all in the different types of feminists. And I choose to accept those labels, even if it means that people will judge me based off the labels and not take a minute to understand my beliefs.
I love what you just said, because I think what you touched on is something that we wanted to touch on is, you know, you mentioned that you think some people may not would be surprised that you're comfortable wearing these titles.
Yeah, definitely.
And I guess my question is, do you believe that's because you come from a conservative church background? It's the conservative evangelicals that seem to have an issue with the term feminism.
You know, that's a really great question, Janet. And I thought I had a very diverse Christian upbringing, but I think the reason why people might be surprised about that is because of the misunderstanding of feminism and people believing, for example, and something I want to talk about later in this podcast, people believing that all feminists belong in the pro-choice category when it comes to abortion. And those same people believing that all Christians are pro-life. And so I think there's some topics which have become so polarized that people forget that not just with that topic, but with all topics, there's actually quite a lot of diversity within Christianity. There's a lot of diversity within feminism.
Yeah.
And when it comes to conservatively interpreting the Bible, no, I wouldn't be surprised if people were surprised, because of coming from a more conservative background, because of the way the Bible has been interpreted time and time and time again from the pulpit, the same passages over and over, which make people confused about feminism, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think you touched on it a lot. You mentioned that there's a lot of diversity in the church. Because your experience is very different. My church going experience is very different than yours. My background, as far as like church going goes, like was radically changed once I met you. I touch on this because I come from what I would call a very liberal denomination. I come from UCC, where it is an open and affirming church. I grew up going to pro-choice rallies where my pastor led it with an opening prayer. I grew up with an LGBTQ, I guess small group isn't the right word, but that's the only thing similar to what it would be most equivalent, but to a small group in my church that led regularly. And I never knew that there was this, that this was a conflict, that women couldn't be pastors, that women weren't supposed to have leadership roles, that women, that Christians couldn't be feminists. Like, I never even knew that this was a problem. Like, because in my upbringing, the answer was so, well, of course you can be a feminist and a Christian. Of course, everybody is welcome here. There wasn't as many, I didn't have as this kind of confusing theological upbringing with people are saying this over and over again from the pulpit. Cause I wasn't hearing that. That wasn't something.
Right. Wow. Bless you.
At my church. And I think that's something that should be addressed to our audience, is that just because you heard this over and over and over again at your church, I didn't hear that. You know, like, that doesn't mean that someone else is learning the same thing. Like, it. So I wanted to touch on that because you touched on it, because there is diversity within the church. And while some people, while some churches, like, this is a hot topic and that kind of deal, this is something that, you know, we're acknowledging that some people didn't even know it was an issue based on the church that they're in.
That's really, like, honestly, I just can't even fathom having had that type of upbringing. So even when I'm saying I didn't realize how conservative my upbringing is, hearing, you know, you and I knew some of that, but it's just like, oh, right. That is how diverse Christians can be. Yeah. Some are going to pro-choice rallies. Some are going to pro-life rallies. And Some people might be shocked to hear that, but there is so much diversity.
Yeah, which I think is also why we wanted to start this podcast, is because we felt like we heard a lot of the conservative side, but we wanted to hear a little bit more of the other side and maybe more neutral middle ground as well. So I love that we're kind of talking about these, diversity within the church. So let's acknowledge now, let's move into like the argument standpoints. So let's go into it. So there are people, we said that there are on the conservative side of the evangelical Christian side that we know believe that this is a hard no. Like women, like Christians can't be feminists. One, because there's one argument that the answer is no, because Christians are Christians first. There is no conservative Christian. There is no Christian liberal. There is no Christian feminist. God is first. So there is nothing else that can even coming in up political and stuff that's placing it with God, which I don't think that is one. I've heard that argument. That is the argument that if God is first, then that's it. You're not looking at anything else.
Can I just say something to that though?
Let's go.
Because the Bible is certainly not the Bible has certain guidance in our life.
Yes.
For example, to take care of the poor and the widow.
Word.
And so for me, it's like, well, you don't have to call yourself someone who's advocating for the poor. You don't have to carry that label.
Yeah.
But if you're doing it, you kind of are, you know? So so my thing, it's like, well, I advocate for women in my job. That's literally what I do for a living. And so, you know, I don't have to accept the label of feminism, but I'm doing feminism.
Right.
So, and it's kind of like, okay, well, again, sure, you don't have to accept the label, but if you do believe in the Bible and the Bible is saying, you know, X, Y, Z, or Jesus led in a certain example, you don't have to accept the label, but you're doing it. So.
No, sure. I think, I think you make a really good point, because it's the label and stuff that people get hung up on.
It really is.
I'm a Christian. I'm a feminist. I am both at the same time. And that I think is where that hang up is that you can't be something at the same time, when that's exactly who we are. That is exactly who we are. We are, you know, daughters of a king, but we are also daughters of a servant. Like, we are a conundrum all mixed together. And so, you know, I wear the title Jesus Feminist, I think, strongly, just because there are so many people that think that you can't be, that you can't believe that women are equal to men, that because of the Bible. Like, there are people that think that because, and this leads us into our next point probably, is that there are passages in the Bible where when you hear them, you're like, what, excuse me? It's 2021. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? How is this like, a man is not 50 shekels and a girl is 5 shekels, Leviticus. Like, what are you talking about? Like, there's some verses that are problematic towards feminism.
Yeah.
So
let's talk about them. Okay.
Yeah. Let's talk about it.
First of all, overwhelmingly, the arguments I hear come from stuff Paul wrote.
Yes.
And I swear if he was around today, him and I would not get along. Okay. I'm just saying, we would not be friends.
You would not be going to his church. Mm.
I would not be going to Paul's church. That's so bad. Someone's going to burn me at the stake for that. No. And here's why. And cause his wording just has caused so much issues. Okay. Yeah. So let's talk about, and I have to do a shout out to Sarah Bessie. She wrote Jesus Feminist.
Yes. Yes. I think that's a big, we should like put that big shout out to, if you want more information, because we are not going to super deep dive while this is a podcast episode. This could cover years of it.
Yeah. Read her book.
Yeah. So read Jesus Feminist her book. By Sarah Bessie. Shout out to her. Thank you.
She's
for
amazing.
This. Yeah.
So she was the first person to me that interpreted when Paul is telling the women in the church to basically be quiet.
Yeah.
She's the first person who actually explained to me the cultural significance of that moment. and that it was...
The Bible is not a vacuum. You cannot just pick a verse,
right,
and understand it. If you, one, you need to read everything, the whole passage, but there are historical and cultural,
right,
really come into play in dissecting the theology and the verses and stuff. So yeah, sorry, Sage.
Yeah, so right. No, it's okay. So that one specifically, what was happening is Paul was there teaching, and the women in the church had not been formally educated in the same way men had been educated. So when they were all of a sudden allowed to be a part of that discussion, they had a lot of questions. They were like, I have a lot of questions. I've got a lot of catch up to do because society has put me behind. And basically what Paul was saying is like, guys, ladies, if we keep asking all these questions, we're never going to get through this. So please ask your husbands when you get home, not because they were better. It's because they were more educated on the topic. And yeah. So we have like exploded that to like women can't talk in church and stuff.
It's crazy. So just for maybe our audience that isn't quite familiar with the verse that we're talking about, I just kind of want to give a little bit context. So in 1 Corinthians, it said, and let's see, I'll get this right. 1 Corinthians 14, it says, women should be silent during the church meetings. It is not proper for them to speak. They should be submissive, just as the law says. So what Sage is saying, like what she's acknowledging in the historical context is that, and what Sarah Bessie has explained, is that Paul wasn't actually telling these women to sit down and shut up and be quiet for life. That's not what he's saying. This verse is, as Sage pointed out, is the women were going to church for the first time. They were allowed in church for the first time to hear about these messages. And because they didn't know anything, because they weren't allowed in church before, they were asking questions. Like things were being said to them and they were like, what? And so they were causing a quote unquote disruption. And so Paul was addressing this. And so this was, sounds harsh.
Well, and it should be clarified, they were allowed before in the Jewish temples and stuff.
Yes.
Up to a certain point. This was new. Like Jesus created a new, like after he died, his followers created a new church, which by the way, was carried primarily by women.
Funded by women.
And we do not really talk a lot about the mothers of the church, if you will. The women who really supported that, who were leading groups, who were leading actual, back then it wasn't small groups. They were literally leading churches. They were just small.
Right.
And stuff like that. So that's a great one. I think another problematic verse is the one about men being the head of the household.
Yeah.
You have the reference?
Not yet. Keep going though. I'll find it.
Okay. I'm pretty sure any conservative Christian listening to this knows exactly what I'm talking about. About the idea that the man is the head of the household and that the wife is submissive to the husband. And I have listened to a lot of fancy sermons where pastors try to talk around that and make it sound not so bad. And in my view and in my own research, where this idea comes from is actually from the fall in Genesis.
Okay. So I did find it. So it's Ephesians 5:22-24. Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, even as the church is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit everything to their husbands.
Oh gosh, yeah. So I was saying is like the submission, I've heard a lot of like sermons where they try to make submission sound not so bad, which always just make me cringe. Yeah. But where that comes from is the fall. So basically that whole concept comes from this verse in Genesis where it talks about how because of what happened at the fall, now men are to rule over women. Right. Now, before that, the way God intended it was that men and women were co-rulers.
Right.
So equals, egalitarian. After the fall, And I've read two interpretations of that. I've read an interpretation that after the fall, the men ruling over women was supposed to be not ruling like I lord over you, but in a way of protection. Mm-hmm. So basically God was saying like, okay, you're not in the garden anymore. Men, you need to step up and physically protect the women. I've also heard it interpreted as a curse because of what Eve did. That she's the reason, she started patriarchy basically. She's the, and I'm like, are you kidding me? He sat there and did nothing. So in my opinion, it took two for the fall. And that I have always interpreted that as men were meant to protect, not to, you know, lord over or rule. And because of that, I am egalitarian through and through. And I'm not the only Christian who or Christian household that is egalitarian. So I think that's another issue where some people think because they've heard it preached that way in church, everybody lives that way. Yeah. Or that's the only way to live in a relationship. Right. And I'm like living proof that that doesn't work for us. And there are other ways.
Well, right. Yeah. So before we keep going with that,
sorry.
So acknowledge a lot of that. So with that verse, I want to go back to that because you touched on a lot of things. And so that verse is like, you know, wives submit to your husbands. And so we've heard that verse, but what often is not said is the following verse, which is husbands love your wife just as Christ loved the church and give himself up to her and make her holy and cleansing, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes down in the same way husbands ought to love their wives as their own body. He who loves his wife loves himself. So there's corresponding, like what you're saying is that there was the belief structure that, before because of the fall, men were in charge and that's the consequence of it. But we all, and what you've brought up and the reason that there is this egalitarian movement is that wasn't the goal.
Right.
No, that wasn't.
Come on.
Like, that's why Christ came down. Like the whole reason, like the whole Old Testament was like, I came to reset. Like, here we go. Here are my main laws. Love your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
Love me. You know, that's pretty much what it is. Love your neighbor as much as you love, my golden rule. And so I'm going off on another tangent, but the whole point was this, is that Jesus came down to redeem us all. And so the point is that we should be striving for what the goal was, which was there were equal partnerships. There, men and women, as you're talking about, men can protect in not that women cannot be physically protective, there are, men and women are different. We're acknowledging that, but we're equal. And so if you don't acknowledge that, if you as a man are ruling that over your partner, thinking that because you are physically stronger, that you are better, or that puts you ahead in the household, that's what God wanted. That's not what he's saying.
Yeah.
You know, we all have our strengths and weaknesses. And you talked too about how did Jesus talk to women? Was Jesus acting towards women? And so one of the things that I was learning as we were researching this is that one of my favorite stories in the Bible is the woman at the well, where Jesus basically called her out harshly, like, girl, what you doing? And she was like, I'm fine. And he's like, And she's like, oh, okay, maybe not. And so he called her out in a way that responded. And one of the things I learned is that passage is the longest passage of Jesus speaking to anyone in the Bible.
Right, right.
And the other thing too that I think I know you'll touch on, we've talked on this a lot, where it's
just about the story of the woman on the well.
Yeah.
She was one of the first people that he revealed that he was the savior.
Yeah, the Messiah.
To a woman who in her culture had been completely disgraced because of divorce. And
you shouldn't have even been talking to her because she was so disgraced.
Shouldn't have been talking to her because was she Samaritan? I don't remember that.
Yeah, I think that's right.
That, and also I've heard that the only reason, she came out in the middle of the day to get water when nobody else was there because she was ashamed. Yeah. And he revealed who he really was.
Yeah, you don't need to be
this, shameful. This, yeah. Not only was she a woman, so you know, but also she had done sins that people saw as like unforgivable or whatever.
Right.
And I, that to me is Jesus uplifting women.
Yeah.
Hope, giving encouragement.
Yeah.
I
think Jesus is a really good example of what an ally was back in the day towards women. You know, right. Women, like you're talking about women at the woman at the well, like mm-hmm. most men wouldn't have even talked to her, but he mm-hmm. used his status to show that she was worthy of being talked yeah. to, worthy of being redeemed. Not only that, we have Mary Magdalene, which, you know, we have all the stories there, whether she was actually a prostitute yeah. or not. And that, yeah. but she was someone that was very big and important in the church. And when we think about it, like the first person that Jesus revealed his resurrection to was a woman.
Yeah.
Like we've all forget that it was a woman that was the first person that went out and preached like that Jesus is back. Like, and it was men that were like, girl, you don't know what you're talking about. But it was God that was like, I'm going to reveal to her because she is going to be steady. She's yeah. going to know what I'm talking about. And so mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, the most important moments in, I don't want to say in Jesus' life, because that's not what I'm saying, but it's these really important moments where there's been time drawn out in the Bible to show the importance of something. It's been when Jesus is talking to a woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I love it. I just like Jesus, but also
yeah. Jesus thinks women are people, which was radical at the time. At yeah. the time, like, you know, women weren't even allowed to be in the same room with men a lot of the time.
Well,
like,
well, also the one about he was without sin cast the first stone.
Mm-hmm.
So I did some research about that, and one of the reasons for like a woman that could have been getting stoned was sexual, like quote unquote sexual immorality.
Right.
And the like sketchiness behind convicting her was so ridiculous.
Yeah.
That his actions were actually revolutionary.
Mm.
So like there's one where basically if a woman did not prove to be a virgin on her wedding night, she could get like dragged in front of her father's house and stoned
yeah.
to death.
Harsh.
There was another one, and I'm going to share this on my Instagram eventually. There's another one where if she was raped in the countryside, it wasn't her fault. And if she was raped in the city, it was her fault because she should have cried out for help. She would get stoned. It's just like unbelievable. And so his act of like, no.
Yeah,
we're not stoning her is like was actually really revolutionary.
Yeah, he was a rebel.
Yeah.
Like
he was.
Well,
in a good way.
Yeah, a rebel in a good way. I think I love that because I think the Bible, I think some people get so caught up that the Bible is black and white. Well, it says this, it says this, but like the Bible is colorful. Yeah. There's a lot that is said in a lot of different ways, and you really have to look at what Jesus is saying and what the point of what Jesus is trying to say. And,
yeah.
you know, I think we've made the argument is that the way that Jesus treated women.
Yeah.
That's how we're supposed to move forward with that example is that he treated women as people. So we yes. need to treat women like they are people,
yeah.
that they are equal, that they deserve a seat at the table. He brought yeah. them to the table. So we need to continue to bring women to the table.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop because he died and rose up. Like we need to keep going,
mm-hmm.
keep moving forward with this purpose, which is to bring women to the table, to bring women into positions of power and influence and opportunity because they can serve. You know, God right. didn't just make women to be, you know, the stepping stone, the soapbox for their man. We got voices too. We got lungs too. Like God didn't just leave us out. Like, I hate that idea that somehow we're excluded. Like, no, he
and I, you know, like, there's just no possible way to read even the entirety of the New Testament and think that they were trying to exclude women if you understand the cultural context. So for me, if feminism for you and me means equality and advocating for women,
yeah,
boom, like, there it is, in my opinion, from Jesus himself. Okay, boom. For me, what I think people are currently getting stuck on is current today politics.
Right.
So they're maybe forgetting that feminism means equality, or that feminism means advocating for women. And it's just very politically diverse. Politically polarized.
Right.
And that's where I see most people Christians sometimes rolling their eyes at feminism, because of maybe certain feminists today.
Well, I think, you touched on a lot is that politics. So we've been in a supercharged political season for the last, I'll say it, not that it hasn't been politically charged before, but for the last 4 years, we've been in a very politically charged place where if you decide that you are something, you've drawn a line in the sand and you're like, all right, and you're at the battlefield. So if you have put on a label, you basically decided like you've got fighting points. You got not talking points, you got fighting points. So I think for the last 4 years, taking on any label, taking on any title has been risky, has been scary for people.
Yeah.
They don't want to have the negativity that is associated with it because of all the things that we talked about it. There are people that aren't using the same terms as we are, and we have to constantly explain what we say, that yes, feminism is not feminazism where men are better or women are better than men and burn men, like, full on.
To be fair, there could be some feminists out there who think that, just like there are some Christian men out there who think that, are very looking down on women, should not be talking in the church. Like, there's extremes on both sides. Okay. Yeah. So, but the extremes are not the majority in either camp, to be completely honest.
Right.
And so one of the things I touched on earlier, and I hope it's okay if I go into that now, is I think people are shocked when I say I'm a feminist because they believe all feminists can only be pro-choice, which again, the pro-choice and pro-life thing is also a super polarized thing where I think a lot of people are in the gray area. We're going to do an episode on abortion eventually. So I'm not going to go into that specifically.
Yeah.
But what I do want to say, what I do want to say is just, for people who are Christians, who are pro-life, who are afraid to take the feminist label because they're afraid that means people will assume that they are pro-choice. Okay. That group of people I'm talking to right now, you really cannot be pro-life without being pro-women. Okay. Females are still the ones who birth children. So if you are not looking out for the interests of women, their health, et cetera, you are in fact actually not fully pro-life. Does that make sense? Because life still comes out of a female womb. Okay.
I want to get into the abortion argument.
No. This is about feminism. Okay. This is about feminism. Okay. Please. Let me have this. A point of feminism would be the fact that women, up until a couple of years ago, were considered, they could get rejected from healthcare because they were pregnant.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a feminist. That's a women's issue that directly is linked to being pro-life. Okay. So for me, for people who are struggling just with that part, what I want to say to them is you really need both. Okay. If you're going to be pro-life, you have to also consider, you need to consider feminism is what I'm saying. If as a Christian, that's the only thing holding you back, you need to consider, what it means to support and advocate for women as well.
Agreed. I think that leads us into another topic later. I don't want us to go into,
We're not going to go there.
Depending on why that is, because that can go into another topic. But I do think that I agree with Sage, that is something that is a hang up point for you, just wait until we get to the episode of abortion, because I think how what Sage kind of talked on and stuff, what pro-life, pro-choice, what that really means and what it means to be pro-advocating for women,
yeah,
again, are defining terms that maybe you haven't looked at. So before you get too locked in on that, I think it was a great wrap up and a great point for us to talk about our future episodes that are coming up. Because next week we do have a completely different topic than what we are talking about now. But to kind of wrap up everything that we covered today, I think we did a really great job of covering the question, can Christians be feminists? We know that there are people that say no. We know that there are people who have no idea. And we didn't really touch on that too much other than we know that sometimes deep diving into in researching is overwhelming. Trying to find the answers to these questions can be daunting and a little scary, because sometimes it means it's going to challenge your current belief systems. But there's nothing wrong with being challenged and changing. And you're not alone. For those who might be listening that are wondering about this podcast as maybe making them think a little bit, that's okay. You know, we've all gone through, and I say all, as Sage and I have gone through that deconstructive journey where we've looked at our faith and come out of it and can tell you, hey, like, we both still love Jesus and we both consider ourselves feminists. So there's a wide spectrum here of what to believe. And as far as can Christians be feminists, you know where Sage and I stand. We believe yes, because of what the example that Jesus set for us. He uplifted women. And so it's our job to continue to uplift women and to bring them into the room, into the table, and to give them a place and an opportunity to use their voices and gifts. Okay. And so with that in mind, Sage, you want to talk about what we're going to be doing next week?
Yeah. So next week, our question is, what's in a name? And we're going to be talking about meanings of names and...
Does it define you? Does your name define your destiny? Yeah. Does your name define your destiny?
Does the meaning of your name actually matter? So stay tuned for a lighter topic for some more laughs. We're so looking forward to have you back.
Yeah, we can't wait to see you guys and hear from you guys. Please follow our social channels at Florida Grown Femmes Podcast, and subscribe to our podcast channel and look for our social channels for updates on where you can find our podcast as well. Until then, we will see you guys next week.